Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Arabelle Raphael, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That by Tina Horn.
Katie Skelly, K.A. T-I-E.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not K-A-T-Y.
Not K-A-T-Y, not to be confused.
Not to be confused with the Perrys of the world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Take
That's
note.
My pseudonym, I guess, for now.
That's a very clever pseudonym.
Yeah, thank you. Nobody suspects that I'm drawing porn.
Porn drawing? Well, let's just get right into it. So Katie Skelly has been on the show before at one of the earliest Why Are People Into That live shows at the Pleasure Chest last Halloween. We talked about the sexiness of all different kinds of monsters, which was partially in tribute to your new book at the time, My Pretty Vampire, a sort of erotic horror comic that you wrote and illustrated from Fantagraphics. And yes. Now, not even a year later, you have a new-ish book, also from Fantagraphics, called The Agency, which is also erotic and also kind of horrific. This is like
you.
Your wheelhouse.
This is it. I found it. Yeah.
So tell us everything about The Agency.
The Agency is such a fun, like, winding story in my life. Because it was born out of a mutual friend of ours, Kristen Corvette, Kristen Soleil.
Yeah, friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. We did the Monsters podcast together, and I actually worked with her at Japan Society like 5 or 6 years ago now, and she came to a signing that I did at Desert Island in Brooklyn for my first book, Nurse Nurse, and she'd never seen my stuff before. And she looked through it and she was like, this is really cool. You know, I'm starting this blog, Sluttist. Would you ever want to draw dirty comics for it? Like, are you interested in that? And I thought about it and I was like, am I? I think I am. Yeah. Okay, let's do it. And so, you know, we talked more and we like worked out some rates and we worked out a schedule and everything. And I started putting out these weird comics about this girl who was a space traveler who was like fucking mushrooms and, you know, getting sexy massages from her crew member who is a skeleton you know, banging Spider-Man in outer space. And he's a yellow Spider-Man, so he's just like a little off brand. And, you know, just it got weirder and weirder. And it went on for like 3 years, just like me checking in with her, giving her another weird, crazy comic, publishing it, seeing it go live, having a mini heart attack because everybody was going to be looking at it. And I was like,
because you had published a book, but you hadn't been in the web comics game, which has a different kind of immediacy to it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And immediacy. And now with this kind of material, like an intimacy that I was like,
right.
Am I prepared for this? I'm very much like, I don't know if it's an impulsive kind of thing, but I'm very much like, sounds good, let's do it. And then I don't deal with the sort of repercussions of that choice until it's actually happened.
I think that's a good way to be.
Yeah.
Especially as an artist.
It's kind of a dumb fearlessness of just being like, I don't really know any better. Let's roll those dice, baby.
It's probably a good like reflex. It's probably a good coping mechanism. Like your brain is kind of like, you know what? If you overthink this, because overthinking is the, you know, enemy of creativity, as
Absolutely.
We all know. So maybe, you know, the creative part of your brain is like, let's just have amnesia. I've actually, this is a bit of a tangent, but I have more close people in my life that are giving birth these days than I ever have before. And so having conversations with people about the discomfort of pregnancy and the pain of childbirth, and I have long been somebody who believes that, like, for me, that obviously there are queer parents and queer people who give birth, but that for me, like, the queerness of my impulse to procreate is based in art, right? And in the same way that people apparently, it's like this biological imperative where people who give birth forget how uncomfortable and painful it is so that they can do it again. Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like I have that in my nature as an artist. Does that make sense?
100,000%. Because there is nothing that I want more after I've gone through, like, you know, doing a book is such a commitment and it takes forever. So if you don't have that interest in it and, like, you know, you can't sustain the process of making it, not just making it, but, you know, putting it out, going on tour for it, promoting it for a year, you know, talking about it constantly. Like, if you don't have that, then it's not going to happen. And that process is so draining and it can be really painful too. Like, you can have those moments where you put a book out and you do a signing and nobody shows up, or, you know, you'll get a bad review, or, you know,
really go through the ego ringer.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But then as soon as that process is done, I'm like,
let's do it again,
let's do it, I have another idea, you know. So it just, it's 100% like process.
God, that was so
amnesia.
Awful. Let's do it again.
Exactly.
Immediately.
It's very much like a torture that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm,
do you know what I mean?
It's like, I sure do.
It's like, this is what I can handle. So there's definitely like a dumb fearlessness. And there's also just kind of like, you know what? The pain is not that bad. Like,
and it's worth it. Cause you also on some level realize what the reward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The reward is. So, okay. So the agency, and it was called Agent 8 when it was on Sluttist, right?
Yes.
So it's sort of, would you say it's inspired by Barbarella?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's very Barbarella like in the sense of like space slut on a meandering quest with no real purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's 100% where I was. And in a way, using Barbarella as the template for that became sort of an easy way to skirt those bigger fears of, like, I'm releasing my inner ideas of, like, a sexual nature to the totally anonymous world of the internet right now. I don't know what I'm going to get back. But Barbarella has a charm to it. And
for sure.
It has a meandering quality to it. And it's also, it's very much of, you know, of kind of like mid to late 60s, where it's like, we didn't know we could talk about sex. Now it's fun and we can kind of make a game of it. And, you know, it's very non-threatening in that particular way. And so finding that sort of non-threatening voice and finding like a cartoony style to work in was a good entry point into starting to do this kind of work.
Yeah, the agency is very whimsical, even when it's pretty dark. Dark whimsy.
That's my thing.
Well, you know, what you're talking about with the nervousness about putting it out as a webcomic is really interesting because, of course, online there's like the first person industrial complex of so much quote-unquote confession and so much memoir that gets put out, and then immediately, you know, the trolls come for you, or some people are like, this spoke to me so much, and here's a six-figure book deal, and like, and then it's like, we hate you, we're going to send SWAT teams to your mom's house. Like, you know, the internet is different from publishing a book, or it feels more like immediate and dense than it used to. So it's interesting that you're talking about that nervousness, because so far what I've seen of your erotic comics, which is what we're going to talk about more today, is not really about, it's not memoirish in the sense of here was a time I had sex with another human, or here was a time that I masturbated, or here was a relationship that I had, or what sex meant to me at this point in my life. It's fantasies, and I can imagine how it could feel like you're making yourself really vulnerable by like admitting that you have these thoughts, or that you might have these fantasies. But that's interesting. I guess my brain doesn't automatically go to a place where I assume this is your spank bank that you are sharing with us any more than I would necessarily think that a horror writer is constantly fantasizing about, like, eviscerating people or whatever they're writing about. But do you think that with sex, and especially as a female creator, do you think that people assume that these are your personal fantasies?
Yes, definitely. And I've had communications to that fact.
I'm sure.
Many times. And I also think that they're, to go back to John Berger, who's one of my favorite
ways of seeing,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Men act, women appear. So right. If I'm putting this work out, I'm not actually working through an idea or trying anything aesthetically. I'm trying to attract this sort of scenario into my life.
Right.
Some people, you know, interpret it as this kind of like personal ad, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Is it?
No. I mean, I would love
to. Are you looking for a skeleton to give you an ass massage? I just have to interject and say that I did an ass worship workshop at the Pleasure Chest last night and made a little slideshow. And I did actually include this spread right here of the skeleton giving an ass massage, partially because she just looks so happy in her little leotard to be getting this nice,
I'm so honored,
bony rub down.
Did people like it?
They loved it.
Oh, I'm so honored. That makes me so happy.
So it's not a personal ad.
No, I think with the ideas and everything, and especially in the Agent 8 comics, it was more just kind of like, how do I work sex into a comic? Like, how do I, it's very like formalist in that way, because even though they do get a bit psychedelic or meandering, they always have like some kind of tension built, and then some kind of release. So it's like, we're just looking at the Spider-Man one now.
How did you get away with
Spider-Man eating ass on a spaceship? Great question. Just like sipping some of this delicious seltzer you've given me. I get away with a lot.
That's great.
I'm always surprised that
this is like not. I mean, you're like, he's yellow, but yeah, like, this is Spider-Man.
I know. I mean, what are they going to do about it? If they sent me a cease and desist, that would be the best possible thing for me.
It would be amazing.
Right? Because then everyone would be like, why is this person getting a cease and desist?
I imagine also like fanboys being like, this is not canon.
Or maybe they would like it. I don't know. Maybe they.
I mean, some of them.
I'm sure they would.
Definitely would.
But yeah, for me, I mean, there are definitely like experiences or sensations that I've had that are in these stories. I mean, I'm a person, you know, like those.
Sure.
I only have so many stories to tell or so many things I can make up. So things that, you know, have happened in my life are definitely throughout these. But there's also this funny thing too of like people that I've dated have been like, that's me, isn't it? And I'm like, no, don't flatter. You're not my skeleton boyfriend. No,
that's not you under the Spider-Man mask.
But
that's funny. That's me.
I think they want it to be them so badly, but it's like, no, I mean, there's no person that's in these so much as just like, oh, I remember like, you know, when I, you know, saw like Barbarella for the first time, or I remember like, you know, the first time that I saw like a woman with a motorcycle jacket on with nothing else underneath it. Mm-hmm. Or I remember the feeling like the first time I put a motorcycle jacket on, or any, I mean, it's so weird because it feels like all of it is, it's very sensory, even if it looks kind of silly sometimes or cartoony. I really like this kind of decision to just put somebody like in the Agent 9 comics in just like the middle of the beach. Mm-hmm. Like there's one like goofy little palm tree here.
Yeah.
Just like fucking on the beach and nobody else is around. Even though it's these very sort of cartoony colors, it's like I really want someone to look at this panel and kind of feel that sensation. And so that's why it's like I'll take out, you know, anything in the foreground, or I'll take out a lot of detail because I'm like, I would really like you to look at this and imagine how that would feel, not just sexually but mentally. Like, how do you put yourself in that kind of place? So I like those kind of ideas.
I mean, there's so much going on even just on this spread of like voyeurism and exhibitionism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm getting lost on the beach myself.
See? It works.
You know, so I was just saying that I was at FlameCon this weekend, which is a queer Comic-Con in its third year here in New York. And I went to a panel with some great artists where they were talking about, they did like several little like assignments beforehand about accessorizing different X-Men in different styles. And they like redesigned a costume for Jean Grey, and it was really fun. And something that they talked about in that workshop and also the Sailor Moon Made Me Gay panel that I went to as well was the idea of somebody making comics and they weren't necessarily talking specifically about erotic comics, but they were talking about people who have an eye for fashion in their comics. And I'm somebody who really grew up feeling very alienated from fashion, and I'm finally, I think, kind of coming around to the meanings behind aesthetics. And I never used to admit that I cared what the characters were wearing in the comics that I love. But then when I look at your stuff and I see, yeah, that you obviously favor motorcycle jackets and you love leotards and you love these little like ankle go-go boots and sunglasses and glasses. What is the connection between all of that style and the erotic aesthetics of the comic?
Those are styles that are not necessarily like historically aesthetically connected to erotica or mm-hmm. porn. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of my favorites, Guido Crapax, so you've got a nice collection out.
Yes,
sitting here.
My editor.
And I'm going to get my grubby fingers all over it.
Brought this back from it's actually in Italian. Shout out to Amadeo, yes. Brought me back this Italian Guido Crapax. Oh, anyway.
So perfect. But if you just kind of look at, you know, what are the outfits that Crapax will always go for? He'll always go for
furs.
Furs, a thigh high. He'll do a lot of garter belts. He does. Yes. You know,
this is like very spiky shoes.
Loves a spiky shoe.
Yeah.
Loves a spiky shoe. And I
corsets.
Love those things as well. But it feels like to me to have a personal, like the most personal element, I think, in these books is the clothing.
Interesting.
Because like there are things in here that I've actually worn.
Yeah.
Like I have, you know, right now in my closet, I've got little white go-go boots that I love. I have my white, you know, cat eye sunglasses. I've definitely worn, you know, a stripy Peter Pan collar dress.
Mm-hmm.
And so those sort of things I think are the most, like that's me in the comic. If anybody wants to look for me, it's not going to be in the sex, but it's going to be in the clothing.
Oh my God. Great pull quote.
Because I grew up, you know, I read comics a lot as a kid, but I also grew up reading a lot of fashion magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And because my dad's side of the family owns a newsstand in Pennsylvania.
Cool.
So I grew up working there, and it was just, you know, long days of looking at Vogue and stuff and just being like, this is so far removed from my reality. I had no context for like what a Vogue editorial was. Yeah. I literally was looking at it and I was coming at it from like, this is trying to tell some kind of story. Like it felt like it was like a storybook or something. And I'm like trying to put these images together. And when you try to do that, I think that's where you get, you know, really crazy, you know, fashion photographers like a Stephen Klein or like a Helmut Newton. And you're like, why are these so affecting and disturbing?
Mm.
And it's like, it's in the clothing. Like who knew that that was something that could be such a powerful storytelling element? And so just kind of like coming at clothing from that alien perspective, and also the knowledge of like, I was never, you know, obviously like my parents own a newsstand, I'm not buying anything in Vogue. And I also, you know, always was like, you know, awkward in my body, and I never really knew like what size I was, and I never knew what looked good on me. And it just felt like it was something that I wanted. Like I wanted fashion in my life so badly, but it was not accessible. And so to get, you know, that same satisfaction out of like reading the Vogues and looking and wishing, I would draw this stuff too.
Mm.
So it felt like, you know what, maybe I can't own it, but in this other way, it's a part of my life that's like more personal.
Cool.
So yeah, and it's like the clothing in here, it's like some of my stuff, and then some of it are like, it's that same
things
sort
that
of,
you wish that you could own.
It's wishing, you know, and it's dreaming fun.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, why are people into that, listeners? Tina here with some exciting news for my New York City-based listeners, especially those who frequent my free workshops and Wire People Into That live shows at the Second Avenue Pleasure Chest. Friend of the pod, Ryan, the manager of the Upper East Side Pleasure Chest, has an announcement which I'm going to read for you now. We at the Pleasure Chest are excited to announce an improvement in the accessibility of our store with the completion of a lift, which is available to transport people who use wheelchairs or who would prefer not to use the stairs to our lower level. The lower level of the store is where our gender-inclusive bathrooms are located and also where workshops and events will be held going forward. Please inform a staff member if you would like to use this option and we will be happy to show you where it's located. Thanks for that announcement, Ryan, and I'll see all you listeners at the next free Pleasure Chest workshop. And now, back to the show.
I think you do a really amazing job of drawing vulvas, and I think that a lot of erotic illustrations don't have vulvas that have lips that hang or like puff out at all, and especially if they're supposed to be aroused.
Right.
I think that having puffy vulvas is a really amazing way to show that the characters with the vulvas are into what's happening.
Thank you. Yeah.
And like hard nipples, I guess, and and like the way that people bulge out of their clothes is really hot.
Yeah, I think, you know, I tend to agree with you. Like, I haven't really seen vulva treated this like knowingly, I guess I want to say.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing.
Because if you
right?
think about, like, I mean, with Crepex, you're not always getting sort of like full frontal nudity. You will get a ton of ass, and that's where his focus is for sure. And that's a lot of my focus as well.
It is kind of a personal ad for him, right?
I mean, absolutely.
I love the pubic hair here.
Thank you. You know, I always get, there's one reviewer, and I'm not going to call her out because she's very sweet, but anytime I do anything, the first thing she talks about is the pubic hair. Like, whenever she reviews my stuff, she's like, huh, full bush on this. Like, she's very, that's her one like area that she's like, got it, Skelly's at it again. Like, I'm just like, what?
Do you think that she approves or disapproves?
I think she approves.
She thinks it's notable.
Yeah. And I, you know, well, that also comes out of like the Italian erotica tradition, you know, like you're always going to see pubic hair in Manara or a Crepax. So I tend to like that because I feel like it puts me in their league. But I also, you know,
you
I think
totally are.
It's such a good, thank you. It's a great texture too. Like, why would you deny your readers that texture? It can be so, so good. So,
it shows dimension.
Dimension. Absolutely. So I think, you know, I don't know why someone would skip that or skip sort of the shape of a vulva either, but
do you think that people use your comics as masturbation inspiration material?
That's a tough question. I've gotten it before, and I don't tend to think so.
Interesting.
The reason that I don't tend to think so is because we're in this century. And I think if you really want to, you know, seek out something that is like to a certain like end. Like if you really just like you want to get off, I don't know that this is going to be the way that we're wired now. Like we're so jaded to the image and we're just so used to seeing motion. I don't know that this is really the one. If somebody is able to, I'm very impressed. Need to get in contact with me.
That was going
to
be my next question. Would you like to hear from them? No.
I'm all set, but I'm, you know, happy to help.
Show your support by buying one for your friends. Or
buy more. Buy seven. Yeah. You know, do what you have to do.
What if you lose one?
Yeah, leave a nice review on Amazon. Yeah. You know, whatever you want to do other than getting in touch with me. I think it could be like a pathway to arousal and to, you know, release, but I don't see it that way. And it doesn't feel that way to me. I don't think that's to its detriment, but it's a whole other thing. It's its own thing.
So what purpose does the explicit sex and nudity and fetishism and eroticism serve if not as masturbation material?
It's a new kind of narrative. It's something that, you know, I think about that a lot because I've been really into the David Cronenberg movie Crash lately, which is one of my favorite films. And it got so much flack when it came out because there would be pornographic scenes right after another, or erotic scenes, I guess, right after another, with no exposition or plot in between.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was censored and people in Britain flipped out.
It was NC-17, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
England, like, absolutely lost their minds over a Crash, which is, like, such a great story. Like, the censorship of that movie is fascinating. But, you know, I think if it's not, I mean, I think it's fine to still call it pornography, even if you're not, you know, necessarily trying to get people to, like, have orgasmic release when they're done reading it. I think it's just another way. It's almost like when I was talking about, like, that sort of beach scene, it's almost meditative in a different kind of way. Like, you can stop what you're doing and read and experience, like, these sexual ideas without, you know, turning on a video or, you know, actually having sex.
A movie like Crash, which, to be clear, is like a Hollywood movie in which the actors are not, to my knowledge, actually having intercourse in the way that performers in a hardcore porn would, although you never know with James Spader. So a movie like Crash or a book like The Agency or your other book, My Pretty Vampire, one of your other books, they could be about arousal sort of more in like smaller waves rather than the idea of like getting to a certain point of the wave crashing. I don't
sure.
know.
Yeah, it's so like difficult to put words to, but I think about sort of the way that like I experience sexuality, like in my own life. It's just kind of like it's never just like a moment of like banging and I'm like, yep, got it, like good for the day, whatever. I tend to like oh, you know, like you start your morning and you like listen to a Sebastian Tellier record and then like later on it's like you take, you know, 10 minutes to yourself and like just drink like a tea that you really like and it's like just you enjoying it and you like sit there and just think about like, oh, how nice is this? And then later in the day it's like you can, you know, send some like photos to somebody or something. Yeah. It's just kind of like taking an enjoyment in the sensations that you feel in your body as opposed to just kind of being like, oh, I just need to get from point A to point B in this sort of thing.
Well, I love the idea of sensuality, of everyday sensuality being a part of your sex life.
Yeah.
And sexual dreaming being a part of your sex life.
Yeah. It feels like, in a way, like connecting it back to, you know, looking at Vogue and looking at fashion magazines, it's like it's a wanting and there's like a pleasure in the wanting And in some ways, that pleasure can be greater than the release even.
Totally.
You know, like wanting to get the Chanel Boucle jacket in 1992 definitely felt better than if I had actually had one.
Totally.
I mean, can you imagine? Those shoulders would be on a 12-year-old. I mean, it's not for me, you know? So it's like, I think there is a lot to be said for that.
See, I told you people inevitably talk about their sexuality as children. But in your case, you're talking about Chanel shoulders.
Exactly. And I, you know, listen, I think to take it back to your original question, if somebody sort of is able to unlock that pleasure, like in feeling aroused reading this stuff, then I feel great. Like, cool. That is a good sensation for me. So, yeah.
Well, there's so many different ways of experiencing sexuality, right? Like, there's looking at a porn magazine or watching a porn movie and getting acutely turned on and masturbating and coming, or watching it with a partner or group and getting turned on and, you know, being inspired to fuck or masturbate and come. But then there's also, I mean, I have to say, like, reading The Agency, I feel, like, sensations like delight, which is a sensation that I like to associate with sex, and wonder, which is a sensation that I like to associate with sex, and also just that, I don't know what the word is for this feeling of just, like, oh, no, she didn't. Like, this is so audacious, and it feels really good that people are making audacious art in this world that feels connected to sexuality. I don't know if there's a word for it.
I don't know. You know what? I'm just inventing it. I'm inventing my own kind of sexuality, and soon you'll see it as an option on, like, OkCupid or something when you're filling out your profile.
So you are working on your dating profile. So if your work in the realm of erotic comics is erotic, is like surreal, sensual, erotic dreaming, then there are also other genres of erotic comics, right? Like, there are definitely erotic comics that are similar to pornography in the sense that you have a loose story or narrative and, like, a narrative arc of people having sex and drawings of aroused genitalia and penetration and O-faces and all that kind of thing that you may well want to jerk off to. Sometimes it seems very evident that people draw it so that they can jerk off to their own drawings, right? Which is something that, like, that's, like, part of the myth of Tom of Finland, right? That he would, like, draw the things that he wanted to jerk off to. And then you have, we were talking about memoir earlier, there's definitely a genre of, like, the erotic fantasy lives of often straight white guys. Like, I have this R. Crumb print above us that says The Sex Obsessions of R. Crumb. I'm a huge R. Crumb fan, and he also clearly, like, drew the kinds of body types of women that he wanted to fuck, liked to fuck. And then you have people like Joe Matt and Chester Brown, who definitely, are, like, writing, like, not only the things that they like to masturbate to, but their experiences of masturbation, or in Chester Brown's case, like, seeing prostitutes. So I, like, pulled down a lot of my erotic comics, of which I have quite a few. I mean, we've got, so here's some R. Crumb, and then there's, have you read Lost Girls?
I haven't.
Oh, my God.
It's Alan Moore, right?
Yeah, it's Alan Moore and Melinda Gebbie. It's basically, like, this epic fantasy retelling of Wendy from Peter Pan and Alice from Alice in Wonderland and Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz.
Cute.
And they're, like, old ladies that meet at a hotel, and so it's really hot. Mm-hmm. I've definitely masturbated to that one, so there you go. I have this collection of best erotic comics from 2008, which has, like, Phoebe Glockner and this, like, Michael Manning, like, fetish stuff, and
Yeah, so they're definitely like some memoir, some fantasy, some porn. I don't know, am I missing a genre? Well, okay, so then the other genre, I would say, of erotic comics would be things that can be, and your work would fall under this category as well, I think, like things that work the best in erotic comics because they could never happen in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, physically they can't happen, like there are fantastic creatures like unicorns, or there's people defying gravity, or people having sex in space, or people having sex with mermaids, or people you know, having sex with like a giantess or something like that, right? So or being or creating scenarios that having like real actors like Holly Hunter and James Spader, for example, mm-hmm. From Crash, act out, would be unethical to even have someone like simulate certain things, or just like edgier to have them do that. And so, but if you're drawing your own creations, then you don't have to get anybody's consent,
mm-hmm.
besides the consent of the person who's drawing it and the consent of the person who's looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also are not limited by things like gravity and whether or not the creatures that are having sex actually exist.
Right.
I mean, there's some like bestiality stuff in some of these books as well, whether mm-hmm. it's like an octopus or name your creature, right? So, I mean, the ethics of that are interesting. Anyway, mm-hmm. so I'm talking about a bunch of different things. I guess like what I want to talk about is genre and what mm-hmm. you think is the difference between erotic comics that are, this is sex that I've had in real life versus this is the sex that I wish that I could have, mm-hmm. or just I want to create a mood.
I want to throw one more thing on your
yeah.
pile of genres, which is you have to look at manga as well.
Totally.
Which has a billion different avenues, and including everything you just talked about, but there are also assets or sort of factors to like gay manga.
Mm.
Like I'm thinking about, do you know Gengoro Tagame?
I don't know.
He, it's very, very graphic, very at times violent, sadistic, like bondage, you know, fighting, bucking, just like sweaty, wild stuff. You know, there are those kind of things that like to the extent that the like eroticism happens in the book, like would be like criminal too. I mean, you have to look at,
right.
There are those sorts of elements to it as well. Yeah, I think, you know, Scott McCloud, who I don't agree with on very much, mm-hmm. talks about how like comics are one of the only active media because you have to put ideas between panels and you have to form a story that way. Like a comic is telling you a story, but your brain is doing the work
right.
to actually form everything together. I disagree with that because he's cutting out film and you have to understand like there are things between cuts in film that your brain is putting together
totally.
As well. But there is something really interesting to that understanding of comics when it comes to eroticism, because you are doing some of the work to picture, like, you know, let's say in this panel they're in this position and then the next one they're in another position. So regardless of if you as the artist are approaching it from like, this is sex I've had or sex I want to have, the reader is still participating in it.
Oh, fascinating.
In a way. Yeah. Yeah, right?
Well, okay, so that is interesting. I wrote my undergrad master's thesis on semiotics in comic books, and one of the things that I talked about was I basically tried to make, like, you know, little like 22-year-old me, like, tried to make the case that the reason that comics, which I, you know, already at the time, like, passionately loved so much and had loved since I was a kid, the reason that they inspire so much obsession and identification is because of the participation that is required by the reader of both reading the language and absorbing the imagery and creating that, like, sequential narrative, like, fusion or union in your own mind. And you, as you're saying, like, it feels like you're an active participant in the story, even though technically you're, I don't know. I was going to say that you're passive because it's static and it's already been made, but also there is so much of your imagination that is participating in it. It's really interesting to think about that when you are reading a sequential narrative sex scene.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have, you know, like a manga artist who, like, manga in terms of storytelling, and obviously this is like a sweeping generalization, but tends to favor, like, deconstruction, like the act of sort of deconstruction. So, like, if a car is crashing in a panel, to go back to my particular fetish, if a car is crashing, you're going to see the deconstruction of action from, like, you know, slamming on the brakes to, like, the car getting closer to a wall, closer reactions, all that kind of stuff, as opposed to sort of Western storytelling especially in bigger, like, mainstream, you know, superhero genre comics, because those stories have been told so often, it's not as important to show all those little sort of moments along the way. Like we were talking about earlier, it's like you explode the planet,
right?
And then you can show reactions, but you don't have to show, like, one full page of it just, like, bursting.
Or, like, the missile, like, heading. Mm-hmm. Okay, now it's a little closer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. So that narrative, or, like, a way of storytelling that's closer to manga, I think might be a little bit more of a passive read. It's still active, you know, you're still putting moments together between moments, but yeah, it's a different kind of way of getting, like, into arousal.
It's interesting to think also about the taste and subjectivity of what we like to watch when it comes to sexuality, because when you're reading a sex scene that's told in comic sequential art, you're seeing only, you know, the sort of the moments, the, like, frozen moments, even if it's mid action, that the writer and the artist, who are sometimes the same and sometimes not, are choosing to show. And they might choose to show the moment of orgasm, or they might choose to show you a close-up on someone biting their lip, or they might choose to show a penis plunging into a vagina, and also they might choose to make that vagina really swollen and wet, and they might, like, not even realize that that is what's supposed to be happening when a penis is plunging inside of it, you know, like, and you're seeing so much of, like, what you're getting this insight into what the artist thinks is important to show.
Yeah.
About sex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be, you know, anything from, like, hey, this, you know, like, this panel in Agent 10, like, you know, this type of bondage is, like, exciting to me and I really enjoy it myself sexually. Or it could just be, like, aesthetically, that looks great.
Yeah.
And I want to invoke that kind of idea of being vulnerable for this panel, because she's about to go through, like, a cult ritual of, like, fucking an octopus to have a vision. So, you know, it tends to, like, vary and meander. But yeah, I think that's the beauty of doing these kinds of comics too. Because even, let's say, you were doing work for hire, erotic stuff, you still could have your moments that you slide your ideas or your interests or fetishes into.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're just exposing a whole new audience to them, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to think about, like, if you're watching porn of, let's say, two people having vaginal intercourse, penis and vagina intercourse, there are going to be things that you, the viewer, focuses in on.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I think, always want to say that, see the same thing every time. Like, somebody, when they look at porn, they're mm-hmm. like in it for the pussy, and they like don't even care if you can see anybody's face. They just want to see that pussy. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, when I'm watching porn, my experience of it is like total, just like jumping all over the place with like identifying, which, as I've said before, is part of the reason that I like gangbang porn. I like that it's there's just like a lot there to mm-hmm. identify with, and there's like there's a lot of different faces, and there's a lot of different genitals, and there's a lot of different permutations of how those faces and genitals are interacting, mm-hmm. and there are like a lot of different butts like doing a lot of different things and different positions at every moment, and there are some scenes that I return to again and again, and it's like I know what's gonna happen, but I'm still surprised.
Yeah, exactly. Your mind focuses on the thing that's going to give you the most pleasure ultimately, because your mind, it, you know, it's part of your body, and so it wants to find the thing that's going to give you the quickest release, the most satisfying release, you know, the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, it's doing these kinds of comics, it's returning to those images, you know, and processing them out myself. Like, you know, I remember seeing this video, and there was like two girls and one guy, and they were kind of like, the plot was sort of like, oh, we like, we're big fans of his, and he's like, I don't know, a basketball player or something, and we like broke into his house, and we're gonna like sleep with him. And it was like, okay, you know, fine, it's cute. But they both wore these opaque colored tights. One had red tights on, and then one had blue tights on, and I was like hypnotized. Like, I was just like, this whole like storyline is so goofy or whatever, but I was just like, yeah, okay, like what if they broke into my house? That'd be so great. That would be so great. So yeah, so then, you know, that's why like Agent 9, it's like girls wearing, that are twins, wearing bright opaque colors, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, yeah. So
the origin story.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not people I dated, it's people that I watched in porn. So thank you to the porn community for giving me everything I needed. But yeah, it's like, I fucking love this book. Just to like keep it totally real with you, I love this book. I'm so happy that it's out, because we, you know, the Sluttest journey, like doing these, was so raw and so personal. And it happened, like, I did these comics, you know, in my late 20s, like just turning 30. And there was just so much going on for me right then, and just figuring out like, what do I want in a job? What do I want in a relationship? What do I want out of my comics? And it was like my Saturn return,
mm-hmm.
so much going, like just so much mental like anguish. And then I came out of it and I'm like, I don't need that much anguish. Like, I can just enjoy what's going on around me.
So just butts.
Yeah, just butts. And I hope, even though it might seem like, what are you talking about? Like, you just drew people fucking. It's like, no, I really do hope that people, like, you know, go on this little journey and enjoy it as much as I enjoyed making it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.